Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Caroline Paul is 60 years old, and she rides a one wheel, paddleboards wherever she pleases, and is, as the endurance swimmer Diana Nyad put it, the toughest broad I know. But in her new book, Paul sets out to show that all kinds of adventure, from base jumping to bird watching, can enrich the lives of women as they get older in a society that tells them to simply fade to irrelevance. We'll be talking awe and novelty, accepting loss and challenging norms. As Paul writes, this is not a book about adrenaline. It is a book about exhilaration. It's not a book about bravado. It's about bravery. Your adventure awaits right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Caroline Paul is the best-selling author of The Gutsy Girl, Lost Cat, and her memoir Fighting Fire about her time as a firefighter. In this new book, we find Paul reckoning with what it means to be a woman who is so remarkably adventurous and brave and is also cresting 60 years old. Her hunch is that talking to other women who've kept up or taken up new outdoor activities might help her prepare for this next phase of life. And that is how she ended up in a plane, thousands of feet in the air, unbuckling herself from her seat and preparing to take some practice steps along the wing. So I am very glad to say that we can actually welcome her here today. Welcome to Forum, Caroline Paul.
I'm very happy to be here, Alexis.
So you're up there. You've unbuckled from your seat. And your goal is to get up on this wing and get into this harness where you'll, I guess, be standing on this plane, as we see on the cover of the book, as it does like barrel rolls. And I got to say, when I heard you did this, I was like, is she out of her mind? Like, what was going on?
I mean, honestly, this was not something I wanted to do. I am actually a pilot. Mm-hmm. So getting out of a perfectly good cockpit and climbing onto a wing at 3,000 feet was really, even to me, that seemed dumb. But what had happened was I saw a video of this woman doing it, Cynthia Hicks. She was 71. And so I thought, wow, what motivates someone at that age? What does it offer us? Huh. And so I gave her a call.
And so were you already deep in book research at this point, or book writing?
Yes.
Yeah. And in this sort of research process, what were you kind of hoping to find?
Well, luckily, initially, I had just thought I would sort of throw myself headlong, like the paraglider that I am, into just interviewing women. But the pandemic hit. Mm. So it turned out I had to do a lot of sit down and read research on what fulfilling aging was really about. And so when I went into these interviews, when I did find these women, I had a really good sense of what I was kind of trying to cover. And I already, even though I went on this quest to find out if outdoor adventure could stay in my life as I aged, I did have a sense by then that, oh yeah, outdoor adventure is good for us.
So what were you looking for then up on the wing, up in the plane, climbing out?
Well, Cynthia Hicks had told me when she explained what she had was doing. And by the way, for wing walking is something that we don't do anymore, but it is something.
Strange. Strange that didn't catch on, you know?
Back in the Barnstormer days in the 1920s when flying was pretty new, people took their biplanes and they went to town and they did all these tricks. And one of the things they did was wing walking, where somebody would do these crazy things like transfer from a moving car on the ground to a wing flying that was a plane that was flying, or from plane to plane. And so I knew what this was when I saw it. And there's only one place in the whole United States that actually teaches it. It's not really a skill. It's more of an experience. And what Cynthia told me is, Caroline, you wouldn't believe the courage that you suddenly feel when you stand up from that cockpit and climb onto that wing. And I thought, oh, God, now that means I have to go do it because I have to write about that.
You made it. right? Like you did walk along the wing and then you buckle yourself into this harness, right? And then the pilot starts doing all these tricks and things.
Yeah, loops, barrel rolls.
Oh my God.
Hammerheads.
Whatever the hammerhead is, I guess that's like kind of big figure 80 kind of thing. What did you feel? Did you feel that surge of bravery or?
The surge of courage?
Surge of courage, yeah.
No, I felt a little betrayed by Cynthia when I first started climbing on that wing because, first of all, the wind was incredible and she had not told me this. And I think of myself as fairly robust and I thought, oh my goodness, am I really going to be able to do this? So I sort of claw my way to the king post and strap myself in, still fairly reluctant about doing all this and thinking, oh my God, us writers, this is what we do for our books. And I strap myself in and he did the first loop. And it was fantastic.
And how did you end up like kind of obviously an experience like that is so overwhelming and it has many different dimensions. But how did you end up actually like kind of labeling what you went through or experienced?
Well, for every single one of the women that I met and the adventures that I went on with mm-hmm. them in order to explore how they matched with these concepts of fulfilling aging, how they fulfilled that for us, I had a preconceived idea of where I would slot that activity in. And I was always wrong. I mean, I was right, but I was always sort of mind blown something new. Yeah. And here I was very, very, very clear that I was there to experience this courage that you can get from a one-time experience that was super physical and adventurous. And what I really experienced was awe.
And what is our sort of technical definition of awe in this case? I mean, more than just sort of like, oh, that was awesome. Like, it's a bigger feeling than that.
Yeah, they've done a lot of studies on awe. Since my book came, I had handed my book in, it was a new concept to me. It's really, most people think of it as a religious experience, but there's a lot of research now on awe. And frankly, it's really good for us. It is basically the wonderment we feel in the presence of something bigger than us. Mm. So that doesn't just have to be a godlike figure. It can be the Grand Canyon. Mm. It can be walking on a wing and getting barrel rolled. It's basically really shaking up your neural system mm-hmm. in a way that makes you sort of open to other ideas. And they found that. They found, they've done a lot of studies on awe now.
One of my favorites is when people see a whale. You know, there's all these amazing, I mean, you can go see people seeing whales or you can go to YouTube and you can type in people whale watching because people just start screaming. They can't help themselves, right? I mean, it's so overwhelming and literally, you know, larger than yourself, but also that sense of like the ocean and it's, you know, the incredible creatures and experiences that are beyond, you know, what's happening for humans.
Just yeah, and day. Awe is something I think we lose as we age because we think we know everything There's a possibility that we're going to lose it. And the cool thing about awe is that they've done studies here in San Francisco at UCSF where they put people between 60 and 90 on what they called awe walks, which was just go out on your walk outside. That was key. And look at things with childlike wonder. And then they had a control group that walked the way we normally walk where we are
looking
on
at
our
phones.
Yeah, thinking about our to-do lists.
Yeah.
And they found that the group that was instructed to have this sort of open mind and childlike wonder at everything had an incredible physiological response. Their immune systems improved. Their whole well-being improved, actually. Their anxiety went down. There was all these metrics that showed just how important it is to keep awe in your life. So look, you don't have to wing walk.
Yeah, right.
You just have to
regular
walk.
Old walk. We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. We want to hear from you. Maybe you want to write this up and how it went for you. Send it to forum@kqed.org. What's the best adventure you've had over 50? And what made it so great? So you can email that adventure to forum@kqed.org. You can call us and tell us about it. 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or you can go to any of our social channels. You know, go to our Instagram, go to our digital community over on Discord and share. What's the best, if you're over 50, what's the best adventure that you've had? So part of this book is trying to reckon with the sort of stereotypes and kind of societal scripts that exist for women as they age, right? That tell me about like sort of what you were feeling and what you were reading about what those scripts are like kind of tell us is supposed to happen or it happens to women who are older.
Well, I was just experiencing it. I was 55 and looking around and my friends were really disheartened about aging. Mm. And I started to be very aware of what we are being told, which is that we are becoming increasingly frail. Definitely our, you know, our brains are not as sharp. And frankly, we're not fun anymore. And we're boring. And as women will often say, we feel invisible after to the culture after a certain age. And I think in a perfect world, I would have written this book for men and women because for men, too, as we age, getting outside is incredibly important. But mm-hmm. when I was outside, I saw my men my age there and mm-hmm. men a lot older. But very rarely did I see women. So I would be on my electric skateboard and there was no women my age doing that. Or when I was surfing, there's so many women that are better surfers than me, but I didn't see them out in the winter swell at all. And so I began to wonder, you know, why is it that we begin to pull back? Should I pull back? And so this book is kind of a quest.
Because you had always, I mean, when I thought about you feeling that pressure, I almost couldn't believe it because I've known you for a long time and you're like the most adventurous person that I have known in my life, maybe. And even you were feeling that kind of pressure on yourself.
Well, messaging, is toxic. And subliminal messaging is even harder. It sort of lodges in you and you don't really know how you're playing it out in your life, but you are. I have to say that I actually was not disheartened about aging, mm-hmm. at least on the surface, mm-hmm. because I had my own mother blossomed as she aged. So I had my own subliminal messaging from her that was pretty constant that made it so I was heartier in this, but I'm not impervious.
Mm. What about the other women adventurers that you interviewed for the book who we'll get into in the next segment, but did they have positive attitudes towards aging? Did they think about aging a lot? Did they not?
Oh, well, they were like any of us. They had, I think what had happened with many of the women is when they started engaging in an outdoor activity, especially if they never had before, it transformed what they thought about themselves in ways that was really eye-opening.
Huh. And just because you think it was the activity itself, like whatever that thing was, you think it was the sort of change in sort of physiological change?
It's that going outside and having an adventure is a direct rebuke to everything that they're telling us we can and cannot do. Mm. Because we're out there, even if it's not just walking outside, because I grew to respect all the great breadth of adventure. But even if you just want to go, let's say, in the ocean and just take a through... Just play in the waves at the edge. There's a physical vitality. There's an exhilaration. There's an uncertainty. And all that, we're told, is not supposed to be part of the way we age.
We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. We're going to get to calls and comments and tell some of the amazing stories from this book. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad. It's about how outdoor adventure improves our lives as we age. We're going to be taking some of your calls about the best outdoor adventure that you've had over 50. What made it so great? You can email those to forum@kqed.org or give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. Caroline, let's take a first call here. This is a pretty good adventure. Lynn in Menlo Park, welcome. Hey, Lynn, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, go ahead. Tell us about your adventure.
Well, when I was 50, I climbed Mount Rainier with my daughter, which is a 14,000 foot.
That's a serious mountain. Yes.
State. Yeah. And then when I was 65, I climbed Cotopaxi in Ecuador, which is 19,000.
Wow. What got you into it, and what did you take away from those experiences?
Well, I've always been interested in mountain climbing, and have been doing it for about the last 20 years, maybe 15 years. And it's just, you know, you train for it for months and months, and then hopefully you succeed, and it's a great feeling.
And do you think you... How did you improve, or what improved, and what were the sort of losses and gains between like Rainier and Cotopaxi?
What were the what? I'm sorry.
Like, what do you think you gained, and what do you think you lost in those years between Rainier and Cotopaxi?
Well, I gained a lot of. I mean, just climbing a mountain is just such a beautiful experience, and I haven't lost anything.
I love that.
I don't think so. And I feel pretty young at 70.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lynn, thank you so much. Yeah.
And thank you, Carolyn. I have to get your book. It sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
You know, that story, it's amazing. I love it. Lynn says, you know, she's now 70. She'd always been interested in mountain climbing, which means she, I guess, took it up at 50 years old or so. Did you find in your book that people did in that period of life begin to take on new adventures just because, you know, maybe other responsibilities were sort of calming down a little bit?
Well, that's the interesting part, is that the lie that we're fed that getting older is this decline, because in fact, it feels like this great intersection where you're still physically healthy if we're lucky, but you can also have terrible things happen so much earlier. So it's not inevitable. Yeah. Oh, my God. And yet also our children are often out of the house and our jobs are, you know, we're pretty much know where we are, and we're past menopause, which those hormonal changes really change the way women look at the world and themselves. Those extreme caregiving hormones have shifted. It doesn't mean we're not empathetic. It means that we're turning more to, I think, thinking more about ourselves in a positive way.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about adventure in this book, what are the sort of different components that all kind of come together in, you know, the different kinds of adventures, from, you know, your more extreme ones like base jumping to your less extreme ones like bird watching? Like, what do they have in common?
Well, that was the thing. I didn't think they had anything in common, I'll be honest. I just thought, oh, you know, I believe that these attributes of adventure, of exhilaration, being on a quest, the physical vitality of adventure, the uncertainty, all that was so important as we age. But, oh, yes, I'm going to have to, you know, include everybody, because I wanted this to be a very inclusive book for everybody's physical situation and their mindset about it. So I did go, for instance, bird watching. And I will admit that I went thinking, well, it's not really an adventure. And I met Virginia Rose, who runs this organization called Birdability, where she brings people with disabilities into the outdoors. Mm. She herself is in a wheelchair and has been since she was 14. As she told me, like, if you're lucky, all of us will be where I am now. And she's this firecracker of a woman. And she, so I was interested in going bird watching because it was about adaptability. It's a way to adapt, and you could still be outside, but you weren't, you know, scuba diving or you weren't base jumping. So it really spoke to this wider range of people. And then when I went, and I thought I would be a little bored, honestly. I mean, I got schooled in this book on this quest.
You had
some preconceived notions of bird watching. So,
yeah.
And then I realized this has all the hallmarks of adventure. We were on a quest to see birds. There was the exhilaration when we saw one. There was the anticipation as we heard it, but we didn't see it. I mean, it had those rhythms of adventure, and it had the physical vitality. I ended up going on a bird-a-thon, which I didn't realize there were differences. And we walked or wheeled, because there were a lot of people in wheelchairs, for 6 miles.
Yeah. No, that's serious. Yeah, as you said, physical vitality, physical adventure. Let's get to Anna Maria in Sacramento. Welcome.
Yes, hello. When I, about 20 years ago now, I went skydiving, even though I was completely terrified of heights, because at the time I was a chaplain encouraging people. I was an interfaith chaplain encouraging people to face their fears and get empowered and create the world they want to live in. And that includes really examining and processing your fears and overcoming them, no matter what they are.
Did skydiving change you?
It basically helped me put my own experience and my own self and philosophy into practice. I mean, I needed to face my own fears and walk the walk I was encouraging people to take. So yes, it definitely did that for me.
I love that so much. I love that. I want to say, go ahead.
No. I'm a communications teacher now. Mm-hmm. I'm completely blind, by the way. Mm-hmm. So, you don't need to be sighted to face your own fears and challenges.
Yeah. You don't need to be sighted to throw yourself out of an airplane.
Yeah, right.
I know this because I love this story. Thank you so much for sharing that. I write about skydiving, actually. My own mother went skydiving when she was 52. She was in not a great place in her life, and she had always thought of herself as someone who was very timid. And just sort of, I think, the upheaval of her life at the time meant she wanted to go skydiving. And they said, do you want to go tandem? She's like, oh, no, I'm going on my own. I mean, and she changed. That was 2 minutes in the air, and it changed her because it completely upended who she thought she was. She was now someone who had done a brave thing, as I write in the book. And we kind of at the time, because we were her kids, were like, oh, Mom. She took a sticker from the skydiving place and put it on her car and said it was so that she could find her car in the parking lot easier. And we were like, no, Mom. And it began the long trajectory of realizing that she could do more than she thought. Mm.
You know, Anna Maria also mentioned, you know, that she was a chaplain encouraging people to face their fears and, you know, kind of get empowered. I was really identifying with the would-be swimmers in your book, in part because I'm a terrible swimmer and I have always wanted to be better. And sometimes, you know, if I'm at Point Richmond and I'm watching people go in at Keller Beach, it's usually older women and they just walk into the water and start swimming across the bay. And I think to myself, that's A, the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. And it looks so awesome. And they come back and they're so happy and flushed with excitement, having just, you know, swam a mile or 100 yards. Who even knows, you know? Talk to me about the people in your book who decided to take up swimming and the kind of different experiences that they had.
Well, I was interested in novelty as we age because I think that's one of the pillars of fulfilling aging. We have to trigger our own sense of exploration constantly. So I wanted to find people who were learning something. And I interviewed and hung out with two swimmers. And one is local, Vijaya Srivastava. She lives in Albany, and she had learned to swim at 68. And the interesting thing about Vijaya is that she had no background in the outdoors at all before she started swimming. And she told me she played badminton when she was 10, and that was it. And her doctor said, look, your numbers need to change somewhat. Why don't you exercise? And she's like, I don't exercise. She said, well, you have a pool, right? I prescribe lessons. And Vijaya is fun, and she is somebody who is she just has a naturally exploring personality. Mm-hmm. And so she thought, okay. And she was terrified, as most people are, of drowning, understandably. But she did it. She mm-hmm. started taking lessons at 68.
I think one of the most difficult things about swimming for me is just this idea that you have a different kind of buoyancy, or you need to control your body in a different way from the way it is on land, which does feel to me like an incredibly novel brain thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, I know how to, like, run up and down hills, you know? I don't know how to make myself stay flat in the water, and it feels mentally challenging in a way that must be good for you.
Yes, because, I mean, I think it's a little bit like what awe does. It just kind of rewires, or it dewires what we already have laid down into deep grooves. Even physiologically, you know, if you're starting moving yourself differently, that changes also other neural patterns.
Mm. Which makes me think about another one of your adventures in this book, which is, you know, you'd been a pilot. You'd flown your own experimental planes and flown Cessnas and stuff. And then you decided to learn to fly a gyrocopter, which apparently has a rotor and a propeller, right? And you encountered that same thing, right? That your pilot, the mental training and your muscle memory of piloting these other planes did not translate over into piloting this kind of new gyrocopter.
Well, I had always heard that, you know, our brains sort of harden as we age. And there's now new science, it's not that new, about our plasticity. And in fact, our brains keep making new brain cells. We keep laying down new neural patterns. And if something happens to your brain as we age, we're so resilient. Our brains are so resilient, we actually find new pathways. So they've found that older people often have more creative ways of thinking because they're doing these crazy circuitry that is way different from the younger brain. So I went and thought, well, I'd like to learn to fly a gyrocopter, which is, I am a pilot, but it was still going to be very different from what I had learned because all the controls are exactly opposite. And what I learned was I was actually a better learner than I had been when I was young because I had stripped away all that sort of insecurity, that need to kind of swagger and pretend I was learning. And I was an average student, which I pretty much am, but I learned more, I felt. And what I had a new appreciation for was muscle memory, because we do things on autopilot so much, and I had to just rewire that too.
So interesting. We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. We're also taking your stories of the best outdoor adventure you've had over 50 and what made it so great. You can email forum@kqed.org or you can give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We got a couple of comments here. Let's get to a couple of these here. Listener writes, my 50s started out terribly. I lost both my parents in 2017. Our cabin burned down in the fires of 2020, and my retail workplace in downtown San Francisco closed. So my 7-year-old German Shepherd and I made a resolution to run or walk every street in San Francisco. It forces us to go exploring every day. We usually try for 5 miles per outing. I've lived here over 20 years. I'm amazed at the places I've never been. I've discovered new neighborhoods, cafes, bookstores, landscaping, personalities. It's a whole new world. We keep track on a map using a Sharpie to mark off the routes that we've done. Wow. You know, when you finish, you should come on the show. That's a great...
You know what
that
I love
amazing,
about that? Yeah, is that I think a lot of people say, oh, okay, well, I'll go learn the piano or I'll go, you know, join a book club because that's an exploration too. Mm-hmm. And it is. But what I learned as I was doing this book is how important it is to actually be outside because the medicinal qualities are well researched about birdsong, tree chemicals... Even things like just the sort of soft lines of the horizon versus the hard edge architecture of an urban environment calms our brain. So the general well-being that we feel when we're outside. So I love that story. That's
Here's another one. Joanna writes, I'm an outdoor hiking enthusiast and I love it. I hiked Half Dome in October. A few years ago, I hiked the Camino in Spain. I'm 65 years old. I'm finding that the arthritis in my knees is limiting me. I'd love to hear suggestions on how to continue outdoor adventures as my body ailments are slowing me down.
Yeah, I interviewed Cynthia Hicks, the wing walker, is a great example. She had cancer in her 60s, and a lot of her activities started to fall away. She had actually been a scuba diver. She was one of the few people who had a pretty robust outdoor life when I met her. And so she just kept adapting. She went from mountain biking to road biking. She kept finding ways. So I don't have specific advice because I know that people can find it themselves, but that it's definitely possible.
Well, and you had a pretty severe plane crash, right, and had your own ankle and leg. So how have you dealt with it personally when you felt like this is difficult?
Yeah, I had a bad accident in one of my experimental planes, and I just kept going outside. I became a swimmer more. I mean, I was always a swimmer, but I didn't love being in a pool, but I began swimming. I was just determined. I guess what I did is I realized that getting out and having adventure was still really important to me, and that I just kept finding ways.
Oh. I love also you're just like very chill, like one of my experimental planes. You know, just as we continue on walking, we've got to mention an amazing character in your book, Dot Fisher Smith, 93 years old, right? And is still like a power walker.
Well, she's actually a hiker, but I begged her not to take me hiking because I was really intimidated. Again, I do have some knee issues from being a firefighter. She initially was a little bit disgusted with me, I'll be honest, when I said, could we just do a flat walk for 3 miles?
Yeah.
But she said, I've become more empathetic because I myself had my first injury at 90. but what was amazing about her was that she was somebody who definitely was super energetic and wanted to walk for exercise, but she also stopped constantly to look at the apples on the trees or, you know, that color flower.
Yeah.
I mean, she was the epitome of an all walk.
Yeah. And I loved, she wrote a little haiku, which you placed into the book, which I absolutely love. It's so simple, and yet it is the essence of so much. When I go outside, every tree and blade of grass tells me I'm alive. I love that. And I think maybe that is just the reason behind a lot of the physiological and mental improvement. It's just that simple, like the reminder that you're alive in this one life you have, in this one body.
Yes. I mean, when I think of people telling me, well, I exercise, I go to the gym, which is important. I go to the gym, too. But I don't think that covers vitality. It isn't the same as putting your body into the ocean. Not only does that enliven you on a physiological level, just emotionally, you're like, I'm tougher.
Yeah. My God. I talked with a free diver recently. And one of the things that she told me was that the thing she loves about going into the ocean is all the life that's surrounding her in the ocean, which I had never thought about it like that. But of course, the ocean is nothing but a soup of living organisms, right? I mean, that is what it is. And I love that idea that that's what's happening when you plunge into the ocean.
And our lives have gotten very small. I mean, they call the iPhone an anti-awe device because it does is it centers you, which is not about awe, is all about out of you. And everything is so small.
We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. We're going to get to more of your adventures when we get back. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad. And I just found out you have a book event tonight.
I do, Mrs. Dalloway.
Mrs. Dalloway's in Berkeley at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay, so if you want to go buy the book, get it signed, see who Diana Nyad, the toughest swimmer in the entire world, calls the toughest broad she knows. You can go see Caroline Paul. I want to bring in Eleanor in Richmond. Welcome, Eleanor.
Hey there.
What's your story?
You got me?
Yeah.
My story is that I had to calculate. So it was at the age of 52, I left working in venture capital and tech startup and became a goat herd. And I lived with 20 goats in Point San Pablo Harbor, which is in Richmond next to the Richmond San Rafael Bridge. And I was out with them every day herding goats and building fences, temporary and permanent fences, and working with goats all the time. And it was interesting listening to you guys talk about learning new things and like new neural pathways, because I realized it's also important to note that I learned a new language, which is goat.
Can we hear? Can you say hello to us in goat?
It sounds a little like my laugh, actually. Yeah, no, but I can understand it when it's spoken
wow.
to me.
Ah, yeah. It's like me in Spanish. I understand.
They understand it when it's spoken to them.
Wow.
So it was a just great experience. And I did it in part because I was going broke and I didn't have to pay for anything. I became a woofer, which is the worldwide organization of organic farmers. And you go from farm to farm and you trade your labor for a place to live and food. So I ended up living there for 3 years, part-time in a yurt and another time in a small dwelling.
Wow.
And I live with those goats. Yeah, and I got them on Instagram, Goats of San Pablo. I still post pictures of them, and I don't live there anymore, but I still post pictures
That's
of them,
amazing.
And I still am with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Life-changing. Thank you so much, Eleanor in Richmond. I mean, there's something about a story like that that just reminds you of how much life there is to live. You know, you could just, at the end of the day, you could become a goat herd and you could just leave your job, go to Point San Pablo Harbor or other goat herd hotbeds, and you could do it, you know?
Well, you know, when I was doing the research, what I found was that there was these sort of main pillars of happy aging that I think that are pretty self-evident for all of us, not just for women, is so you need community. So you had a community of goats. Purpose, novelty, health. All those were the obvious things that are covered by outdoor adventure. And then there was that final one that I hadn't actually read a lot about, which was a positive mindset about your own aging.
And like that actually matters?
It matters so much. Because what they've found is if you have a negative view about aging, about your own aging and aging in general, is that you're way more likely to have a cardiac event earlier. You are cognitively more vulnerable earlier. And the opposite is also true. If you have a vibrant, a positive view of your own aging, you're going to be, happier, way healthier, and you live 7.5 years longer.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty eye-opening. And then the question was, the problem about these studies is they tell you this, but they don't tell you how to get there.
How to get the positive mental
health. Because it's so toxic for women at a certain age, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I don't actually even talk about how toxic it is. I don't do the research on that because most women already know, and men. We all know that aging in this country is not as, it's not as, it's not uplifting.
Yeah.
So I was kind of sure that if you went outside, you could cover all these pillars of fulfilling aging and goat herding.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Let's bring in Alice here. Alice in Berkeley, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for this show. And Caroline Paul, thank you for this book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. What's your story, Alice?
Well, I'm 82 and a half, and 2 or 3 years ago, I climbed up to May Lake in the Sierras, and it was 2.5 miles, and it was like straight up. it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life.
Did you have a background of outdoor activity, or was this the first time you'd done something like that?
Oh, I climbed Mount Fuji, but I was a lot young, 30. Is that what you asked?
Yes.
Alice, how did it feel when you got up there?
Well, I'm just tired. Not so inspiring, but yeah, it was overwhelming just to see that gorgeous lake. Mm. I just cried.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Alice, thanks so much for sharing that. You know, there is something about the what outdoor adventures, the kind of, as you were saying about wing walking too, right? That the sense of awe puts you into a space where you're open to other emotions, right? So you do this hard walk, you get up to the lake, you arrive there, and then you're sort of open to experience all the beauty of that place, you know?
Yeah, you know, the women I interviewed were sort of exceptionally charismatic. I don't know if I just got lucky. I mean, also, let's be honest, it's hard to find women, these outdoor adventures. It was hard for me to find because for a couple of reasons. First of all, women don't often promote themselves. Mm. And secondly, they certainly aren't taking selfies all the time and posting on social media after, you know, in their 80s, for instance. And so when I did find them, they were people who, but I didn't want anybody who was really, really good at what they did. Because I felt like I wanted to speak to a wide, wide range of people. You know, this book is for people of all physical abilities and all financial situations, all races. I was really clear that I wanted this book to be inclusive because I feel like going outside as we age is as important or more than any of the pharmaceuticals that we're taking.
Nicole writes, it's been an absolute joy to be exploring new outdoor activities as a 50-plus-year-old. I also love the freedom of being a beginner and, quote, bad at things. I picked up roller skating at Golden Gate Park, cold plunging, trekking in Nepal, and so much more. I find so much joy and awe in having new experiences and learning new things as much as I can.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, as we age, we have less of those hang-ups. And so we are. I have found that I enjoy my adventures much more now, because when I was young, I always wanted to be it to be big, it to almost kill me, and it to be, I was trying to prove something. So I wanted to be first, and I did actually. I was lucky to be adventuring at a time when there was still a lot of unexplored situations. So I was first. I was doing first ascents down big rivers. I was the first to take a mountain bike through the Bolivian Andes, not because I was good, but basically because mountain bikes were new and no one had just gone there yet. Mm-hmm. But now that none of that is important to me, I just love the fact that I have a different outlook on all that.
Let's bring in JJ in San Ramon. Welcome.
Hey, Alexis, thanks so much for bringing Carolyn to the show. This has been so inspirational. 40 years ago, I took a trip after college. I saved up some money to go to Europe, and I had no agenda, no itinerary. Mm. I stayed there for 7 weeks by making beer bottle cap earrings and selling them. Super fun to meet people and just say, hey, do you need that bottle cap? And it just was the most serendipitous thing and many moments of awe and such. I'm going back 40 years later this summer, and I'm finding that my whole approach to travel is really different. I really want to not have an itinerary, but I'm a teacher, and it's, you know, it's a big deal to save up the money to go to Europe, and I find myself being a control freak with an itinerary that seems so rigid. And right now I haven't paid for anything, and I'm just wondering if you could share your advice for, like, how you do your itineraries, how much room you leave for serendipitous moments, and I was a former college athlete, so my body's pretty broken down, but I'm now a poet, and I know how to sit in a place, and I want to be mindful, and yet that awe, that epiphany, those moments that just happen when you're away from home, that you can't really set those up all of the time.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what thoughts you have about planning for your trips.
Oh, man. Yeah, stay with us for one sec, JJ. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I think that it's fine to have an itinerary. I'm somebody who's actually I like to have a plan, and I'm almost early everywhere. One thing I like about outdoor adventure is that it kind of does see what it teaches me that I can control some things. Mm. So I do talk to a friend of mine. One of the things that happens as we age is that life changes suddenly. People die, you get sick. I mean, these are one of the things that we're nervous about as we age, even though, let's be honest, it could happen at any time. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in a friend of mine who had had an abrupt change in her own life, where at almost 60, she found herself basically mothering her own nephew. Mm-hmm. And she became a mother at 60. And so I was interested in how the outdoors helped her, and that we went stand-up paddling. And what I realized is that, you know, you can plan for as much as you want, and you should. You know, I had brought a little bit of, we had bought food, but we hadn't brought rain gear because it was summer in California, and it rained. Mm. So there's uncertainties in the adventure naturally. Mm-hmm. So as long as you should plan for your trip, but you should then have an open attitude, I think, because the outdoors, and when you're traveling outdoors, what the uncertainty itself is just baked in.
JJ, what I wanted to say is you could live out my dream of doing hut-to-hut hikes in the Dolomites. And the thing that I always loved about that idea is you don't have to plan as much, because some of it is kind of planned for you. There's a route, there's all these things, but there's still all this space to have those components of adventure, you know? And I think there's other ones too, you know, like someone earlier on the show mentioned the Camino, and you can walk that too. Those treks really strike me as having an amazing balance between what you need to plan, what's physically difficult, but what's also kind of, you know, you're taken care of in some way. You're not in the middle of nowhere. You're on a well-known route, you know? So have a great trip, JJ. We got a couple of other great calls here, Caroline. We've got, listener says, at the age of 64, I went to Tonga and swam with humpback whales. One day, two male adolescent humpbacks decided to play with us and came underneath two of us and threw us in the air. It was by far the most exhilarating experience I've had, and taught me that my fear cannot stop me from life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in that thin line between fear and exhilaration, because fear and exhilaration feel very similar. Mm-hmm. They have the similar, like, you're sweating, your heart's racing. Mm-hmm. And I think especially women often hold themselves back when they're feeling these signals because they misinterpret them mm-hmm. as fear, when actually they're opening a possibility for exhilaration. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage myself and other people that when we start to feel fear, to look at it as a possibility for this exhilaration.
Mm, that's beautiful. Let's bring in Bonnie in San Rafael. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. This, on every point, it just resonates so much with me. I'm calling because I'm the daughter of a paraplegic who was a World War II Marine. And after the war, she had her family, three kids, and then she became a paraplegic. And that was in 1959. They didn't think she'd live another 6 months, but she lived until 2002.
Wow.
And she traveled only after she was in her 50s. But in the intervening years, she was a mom, a poet, an artist, all those, you know, kind of outlets for her. And I had many, many wonderful adventures with her traveling to Mexico and Europe and the Middle East and all over. In more recent years, I've traveled with my own daughter, who has some disabilities, and there are learning disabilities, but she used travel to learn, and it has been a fabulous way to expand her horizons through experience. And we've all, you know, gone to Costa Rica and Fiji and Singapore and, you know, places that, you know, she would never have experienced, but we were very fortunate to do that.
Oh, Bonnie, that's
great. And now
great.
I'm approaching 70, and I'm looking at going on a birding trip. I discovered birding during the pandemic when I was back at home, and rediscovered photography, something I did when I was young. And I'm having kind of a moment about whether it's better to go off on this adventure of a lifetime in the Pantanal in Brazil, or spend what time and money I have with close friends and a carpe diem kind of trip, close or family. Mm. I did do a couple of carpe diem trips with friends, and one of them's no longer with me, and I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah.
So just wanted to talk about the carpe diem aspect of it and and you know, the opening of horizons for people with disabilities.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bonnie. I mean, maybe part of that is right, just that the how to incorporate community versus the kind of solo adventure that people sometimes are seeking.
Well, I found that most adventures, they look solo, but they're just not. I was interested. Again, like I would approach each adventure that I went on with a specific idea of how it would slot into helping us as we aged. And I would come out surprised. And one thing I did is interview the oldest BMX biker in the country. She was 74. And I thought I would be talking about how competition enlivened us and sharpened our brains. And instead, what I realized, even because BMX bike racing, which is just going around a track on a bike, doing sort of jumps and stuff, is actually an individual sport, but it turns out it's really about community and that BMX community. And it's more than just being part of a community. There is research on having a deep sense of belonging, which I think is different. So whereas the trappings can look adventurous, it's really about the belonging part. And so I can only say, Bonnie, that for me, that no one can advise you on what trip to take. It's not even about the details of the trip. It's about what emotional rewards you're going to get. And we couldn't tell you. So possibly you can do both. What I've found is that I enjoy my smaller adventures way more now. They have all the aspects of an international adventure that I used to go on. But all I have to do is leave my house for half a day.
Last comment from listener. Miss Chris writes in to say, one summer day, I went to Santa Cruz with my teen kids. My oldest and I were in the water when we noticed the birds and dogs were frenetic on the shore. Seconds later, we were surrounded by glittery, silvery smelt and cormorants swimming in and through our limbs. It ended as quickly as it began. I was absolutely awestruck. And by the way, I'm 69 and preparing for a month-long walk in Spain. So both the you know, everyday close by as well as the international can have that amazing sense of expanding who we are and what we do in the world. We've been talking with Caroline Paul about her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. If you want to hear more from her, she's at Mrs. Dalloway's in Berkeley at 7 o'clock tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
I love this. Thank you so much, Alexis.
Thank you to everyone who wrote in with your stories and calls. Sorry, we couldn't get to everybody. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.